Counsel? Mr. Cunningham.
Good morning. My name is Cunningham, and I am here for the Manufacturers Railway, identified in the briefs as MRC and MRS. I'll call it MRC for convenience. This case is about an agency decision. It was undertaken without legal basis or public purpose, solely to force a cash transfer from one private interest to another. For 69 years, the entire...
Can I ask you a question?
Certainly.
That's the chase of my confusion. The government, the STB, in its brief says that that they have not terminated your common carrier obligation. And they use a phrase that you've retained residual common carrier status. Is that so?
They have terminated our obligation to provide common carrier service, and we have terminated the railroad has terminated all common carrier service. The railroad's lines, which lay fallow,
right,
are available to be reinstated in common carrier.
Right, they're under STB jurisdiction, but the MRC has no common carrier status.
It's terminated all common carrier service, yes.
What about Foster Rail?
Pardon?
I thought Foster Rail was using these lines.
A contract carrier will operate over the line to get between the plant that Anheuser-Busch has and receives grain and other stuff.
That's a private carrier.
Right?
So are you
deriving... The rental of the line to a private carrier is not a regulated event.
Are you deriving rail revenues from the line?
No. So for 69 years, the entire system rule excused railroads from making payments to labor, or called employee protective condition payments, when they terminate all rail common carrier services. The rule was promulgated by the agency and ratified by Congress and the courts on a basis of essentially a two-part rationale. The first is that the only public purpose served by employee protective payments, which is the facilitation of increased efficiency in the remaining rail service post-abandonment or post-discontinuance, is obviated when all service is terminated, which is the case here. The second was, and it's a corollary to that, without a public purpose.
Your point, I take it, is that the rationale behind the EPCs is that there had to be an ongoing common carrier obligation. Is that right? And your point is there is none for you.
There is none for us.
Okay.
The whole theory between
right.
The evolution of the labor protection payments was to overcome the right. It was a trade. Labor gave up its rights to take labor action upon an abandonment or discontinuance, which would prevent that from happening and reduce the opportunities to realize efficiency.
You don't have any rail line that can be struck now, right?
Absolutely none.
Okay.
And the second is that because it would be unreasonable, and as I said, this is really a corollary, to require labor protection payments when there's no ongoing service to support it. You're just taking capital away from the railroad or its owners and transferring it to labor.
You say there's no public purpose. Isn't there a public purpose reflected in the statutory text of preventing employee dislocation?
There is no, that has never been offered as a reason for offering the payments.
You just read the text of the statute. It's the undeniable obvious purpose.
It's to preclude it in a context, and that has been addressed by, again, the agency. The courts and the Congress have all recognized that in a case when service stops, termination of service is a key word in almost all these cases, there's nothing any longer to support, no labor action to avoid, no efficiency
right.
to be gained.
That's not really,
so all we're doing.
That's not reflective. Just get this out there so you're aware.
I don't think
the statutory text doesn't reflect that at all.
The evolution of the statute does reflect that.
Some committee report that was
smuggled in the application, Your Honor.
Hmm?
In the application. If it were for dislocation, then this rationale would not trump it. And in any case,
What rationale?
The
current rationale that they're relying on.
The current rationale for the rule would not trump relocation payments. It is not a world in which when a railroad ceases operating, it continues to get rail relocation payments. And this would be the first case in which that would have been imposed. The rule was never in the past conditioned on the method chosen to terminate service, the ownership of the rail lines in question, or whether the STB retained jurisdiction over the terminating carrier. Yet, when MRC sought to discontinue all its money-losing services, STB, sua sponte, created an exception to the rule based solely on those three factors.
An exception to the exception?
Yes.
Yeah.
A long-standing exception.
Right, never applied in this instance, though, right, where there's let me ask you a couple questions. Why didn't you abandon as opposed to discontinue?
We didn't abandon because it takes longer, it costs more money, and we wanted to retain the lines.
Mm-hmm.
And I can elaborate further if you'd like.
That is what the board's relying on, is distinguishing this from a complete abandonment or from a discontinuation of service on someone else's lines.
That's indeed what the board is doing. But they never.
Why isn't that good enough?
Because the retention of the lines does not meet the corollary part of the rule. It doesn't provide the cash to make the payments. Yet we would have had it, because we were a losing railroad, we'd have had to take it out of the holder's equity. And that was the very reason.
But isn't it somewhat odd to think that if you're discontinuing some lines or abandoning some lines, but not your entire system? What's the rationale for requiring payments there? I guess that's
the rationale is that we're trying to avoid, we took away labor's right to strike upon an abandonment,
mm-hmm.
so that we could have abandonments of lines that were unprofitable and therefore strengthen the remaining system. In this case, there is no system to be strengthened.
It strengthens the company, though. It still exists the company, right?
That wasn't the question. The question is strengthening the service. This is all done to allow railroads more ease to reduce inefficient operations and increase the strength. It was thought to be good for labor.
When you say reduce inefficient operations, not really, because they have to pay when they discontinue some lines or abandon some lines. That's reducing inefficient operations, but they have to pay the employees.
Yes, and it's been explained in the cases that the assumption, I think, in my 30 years of railroad experience.
The assumption is they're going to make so much money.
No, the assumption is they will continue to make money from shippers,
right,
so that they will have the ability to make these payments and the system will bear the burden of those payments. Where there is no system to bear the burden.
By raising
it's a taking from the shareholders,
right,
not
by raising
from the shippers.
The prices on the shippers if needed to cover the costs of the no longer employed labor.
Either increasing it or because you've reduced losses, you will have more money to pay them. Make sense?
Now, this private carrier, I know it's not regulated. What does that mean with respect to the crew? They're not union?
They will provide the crew. This is
so you're replacing
a few cars a week.
You're replacing a union crew with a non-union.
I'm replacing an operation that was losing millions of dollars per year with an operation that has a marginal cost. It's lower than the value of the service.
And one
it's
reason
going to run
is
over
it's
our
non-union.
Property. Pardon?
One reason is it's non-union, right?
I don't know whether it's union or not. I didn't write the contract.
Oh, I thought you said
No, I just said it was...
Foster Rail, you don't know what the crew is.
I don't know what it is. Okay. I would assume it's non-union, but I don't know.
So before the board, the union was arguing that the statutory text didn't allow for any exception. Right?
Before the board, the union did not argue that the rule didn't apply here. They didn't say that discontinuance precluded the use of the rule. The union said...
The statutory text required payments in all cases.
No, it did not. It said that the union said that we're going to get a bunch of money as a result of this, and therefore we ought to fork it over.
I thought the union made a broad argument that the statutory text was clear and that didn't incorporate the exception that had been recognized by the ICC years ago and referenced.
I don't recall it. My understanding, and I'll stand corrected, and I'll write a letter if I'm wrong. My understanding is that my memory is that the union came in and didn't say this shouldn't be applied because it's a discontinuance. They said it shouldn't apply because of the nominal exceptions to the entire system rule. And as we note in a footnote in our brief, it's not clear to me that exception has ever really been applied. Mm-hmm. We sort of assumed it earlier, unfortunately, but on closer look, when we're writing a reply.
And I hate to belabor this, but
all right.
Let me try to understand, because you're making good points. The statute requires employee protective payments, right? And this is taking property from one person and giving it to another. That's what those are. And those are specifically?
No. That's the difference. And I think that if you go back and read all this lore.
I read some of the lore.
The difference is that there was an assumption that if there was no public purpose otherwise to be realized, you could not make these transfers. Mm-hmm. The whole scheme was set up in the first place in order to realize the public purpose of greater efficiency in the surviving rail system. Mm-hmm. In the absence of that, and in the absence of any common carrier revenues to support labor payments, they have not been made. This would be the first time where they've had to be made in that circumstance. Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example. If Manufactured Railway, which is a nominally very short, but takes up a lot of space.
I understand your theory, and it makes a lot of sense. If I were designing, it makes a lot of sense. I'm trying to connect it up the statutory text. What I read the board is doing is saying, we've created these exceptions before, but they don't extend quite to this situation, so we're not going to extend the exceptions any further.
Let me address those, Jim. Mm-hmm. If you accept what Congress said the purpose of this was, to preclude a railroad that was terminating all service from paying labor protection.
And where are you, when you say when what Congress,
Congress said that, when it
that's
enacted,
in that House report?
The House and the Senate report clearly talk about termination of service. And they do it they're saying we're not overriding this rule that's been in place since 1942 because we recognize that there's nobody there to pay it. Nobody there to pay it means no common carrier service because you cannot require a carrier to operate at a loss and you cannot require carrier capital to be used for employee purposes.
I think you'd be in great shape if that were in the text of the statute. What I'm worried about is it's not in the text of the statute, and the exceptions, and what I understand the board's rationale to be, although it's a little murky, is, hey, we have these pre-existing exceptions, but they are tough to square with the statutory text. They don't quite say that, but that's what I read in there. And we're not going to extend those exceptions any further to this new situation.
Well, I think you would be reading in to say the latter.
Okay. They use the word extend, but...
not the extension, but the tough to square. They don't talk about being tough to square.
They have a whole paragraph about...
benefits.
Yeah. Well, they have a paragraph about the plain text, too, in there.
The plain text clearly requires the payment of labor protection.
Yes. Exactly. But
that plain text has been put aside by the agency, the courts, and Congress on a very particular rationale.
Yeah.
The rationale is no service, no pay, because you can't be required to pay these just by yourself. The board argued three things. Let's go back. I think this is really important. The board said there are three reasons. Because you chose to discontinue, even though Congress gave you a choice to discontinue or abandon, because you own lines afterwards, which has no source of income, and because we have jurisdiction, therefore we can make you do it.
Yeah.
Well, they would have jurisdiction in all abandonment cases, so that doesn't work.
The third one doesn't work, and the first one doesn't. What about the second one?
The ownership of rail lines?
Yeah, because
you retain
the potential for further.
If we had abandoned, in our case, because we don't have the underlying easements except for a couple of lines that are totally been out of service for years, we would have retained ownership of our lines. So, as do most carriers until they either sell them or they're taken by an underlying reversionary interest or they're dedicated to public purpose. So that exception doesn't work. And what's really wrong, however, with what the board did here is that it never explained the relationship between its exception to the exception and the purpose of the rule or the purpose of the law. Of the statute, labor protection, which is efficiency. There's no efficiency to be gained here, and they don't even talk about it. And the exception, which is to preclude causing carriers that are no longer serving to pay for labor.
You never, in your briefs or here, ever talk about the purpose of just helping out people who are going to lose their job. That seems to be
as far as we know, that is not. There's never been any notion that there was a tension between that purpose and the rule, and the entire system rule. Mm-hmm. There's not been a question. The assumption has always been that you can't make a carrier pay for relocation if it doesn't have common carrier funds to do so, because mm-hmm. you'd just be making a private transfer. There's no public purpose has been established in making employees better off than the railroad. And no one has ever established that. So we.
All right, you're over your time. We'll give you a couple minutes and reply.
I'd like to take rebuttal if I could. So the one point I want to make is if there is no public purpose to this, then there's a taking. And that's
all right.
The last. Thank you very much.
Ms. Strasser, good morning.
Good morning.
Before you begin on the merits, can you just address standing in view of the railroad's sealed declaration?
Yes, Your Honor. Based on the declaration that petitioners submitted, it would appear that they have standing and the government does not continue to question it.
Okay.
Turning to the merits of this case.
Can I ask you, I didn't understand what you meant in your brief by the phrase residual common carrier status. What does that mean? Are they common carriers or not right now?
That really goes to the heart of the rationale of the board's decision, Your Honor, which is that unlike other instances where a railroad is seeking to abandon its entire line,
right,
or an operator that does not own the line is seeking to abandon its operating authority and they are exiting the industry,
mm-hmm.
here, manufacturers was continuing to be a regulated entity. Residual common carrier means simply that at some point in the future, if
they can get back
business
in easy.
Climate improves, yeah. They can resume operations. If they have new shippers, they do not need to come
to the
board.
Did the board say
that?
Is that an explanation the board gave that reentry would be easy, therefore we'll treat them differently? I don't think it is.
Your brief did.
I didn't see that.
The board does speak on page 4, Your Honor, to the fact that they're choosing only to seek discontinuance, which is giving up partial. I think it's on page 6, Your Honor, the
page
board's
six?
Decision, yes. That MRS is deliberately choosing to give up only part of its legal authorities. In the first full paragraph on page 6 that begins, that is not the case here. And two sentences down, MRS is deliberately choosing to give up only part of its legal authority.
Right.
Its present obligation to operate over its lines. Present meaning that it may resume operation. MRS itself has stated that in its own brief and to the board that if business improved, it might resume service.
And is that the primary distinction that you find between their circumstance and the other instances where the rule has been applied?
There are many benefits to remaining a regulated entity, and the board's decision does speak of the benefits. It does not go into all of the reasons that we have in our brief. However, those issues were not raised, those factors were not raised before the board in a way that the board could have responded. We have argued that they were waived, but if not waived, certainly the board can explain in its brief a response to those arguments. And so the benefits of discontinuance include that this carrier retains the right to bar the vesting of the reversionary interests of the landowners. MRS has said that it only retains an easement in this right-of-way. It would seem that it does not own the right-of-way.
But hasn't it been
simple.
The case that past board discussions of this issue of the relocation benefits have always been framed in terms of the ability of you have an ongoing common carrier activity, and that's the possible target of labor unrest, and that's also the source for the relocation funds, that you have an ongoing common carrier activity. And as far as I can tell, we have none of that here, right? There's no ongoing common carrier activity.
Your Honor.
We have one that they may be able to get back in very quickly down the road, but that's a new rationale, right? That's a new approach to
well, this
how to
is
do
a case
with the
of
EPC.
First impression, Your Honor. Yeah. So what you have here is a presumption in the statute that the agency is to impose labor protective conditions on every abandonment and discontinuance, starting with that strong dictate of this plain meaning of the statute. Yes, the agency has some discretion. It has had it since 1942. It has exercised it in a narrow context, which this case does not fit within. Therefore,
and it doesn't fit within because they've retained ownership.
Not ownership per se, Your Honor, but that they have, by the ownership goes to the fact that they remain subject to the agency's jurisdiction and that they are not exiting the regulated rail industry, unlike every other case that the board looked at where it did apply the policy. When the board looked at this case and understood that this was a case of first impression, it had to determine whether or not to apply the policy or to follow the statute.
But the rationale, I agree with you that it's a case of first impression, but the rationale underlying the existing exception would seem, as just Judge Griffith said, to apply to this situation as well, even though, as you say, there is a distinction factually here, but the rationale would seem to apply here as well, right?
Arguably, Your Honor, yes, you could say that, but arguably that rationale could apply in every abandonment and discontinuance. There are many short lines today. Suppose you had a short line with only 20 miles and it had some service on 18 miles, but not enough to be profitable, and it came in and asked to seek to abandon 18 out of 20 miles, and those 2 miles served
right.
One shipper.
Right. That's
presumably, they would not be able to absorb the costs by transferring their employees to the remaining 2 miles, or that the shippers on that remaining 2 miles would be enough to help them pay labor.
The rationale for the existing exception arguably goes to all discontinuances and abandonments.
That's
right?
Correct, Your Honor. And the board does not have the authority. Congress has not given it that authority to apply a means test in every case.
Right. Arguably, it hasn't given you authority to do it in any case.
Arguably, that is correct, except that this court in Simmons in 1982 read in a certain amount of discretion, and no one has ever challenged that policy.
Well,
that's not an issue in this case.
I know it's not an issue, but it's where I started was with the statute. And the union did challenge that before the board, didn't they?
Yes, Your Honor. Contrary to what Petitioner's counsel said earlier, the main argument that the union made to the board is that
Simmons
in 1995, ICTA changed. Even if the policy was blessed by Congress in 1980 under the Staggers Act, and prior to that under the 4R Act, when ICTA came along, the unions argued it no longer had any remaining validity, that Congress did not intend that. And the board addresses that in its decision, says why the board didn't agree. The policy is still viable, but it is appropriate for an agency to apply an exception to a broad congressional mandate narrowly. How can that not be a reasonable and rational decision of the agency?
Well, because the rationale for the exception arguably goes here as well. I mean, that's the response, right? So you get in trouble when you start departing from the text to begin with, but when you create a rationale for an implicit exception, trying to cabin that rationale in a principled way is hard.
That I understand what you're saying, Your Honor, but on the other hand, the concern about avoiding labor strife isn't a case-by-case determination. Congress decided in requiring that labor protective conditions be imposed on every abandonment and discontinuance that this is to provide a stable national rail transportation system. And there's a weighing, because otherwise all employees could exercise their rights under the Railway Labor Act, they could go on strike. And so requiring that the board impose labor protective conditions which help employees in general, across the board, a broad category of circumstances, abandonments, discontinuances. It's not intended to be a case-by-case adjudication by an agency as to whether these employees are likely to strike or whether this railroad can afford to pay labor protective conditions. We would have to have an individual hearing in every case if that were so.
Can I ask you about if the rationale, short though it is that if the line is owned, that means the carrier remains subject to the board's jurisdiction, and that was part of why you said they had to pay these. Why wasn't that the case with Greenville County, where Greenville County remained subject to the STB's jurisdiction, and the difference being that hadn't run for 2 years or something like that, I think. They'd been out of business for 2 years. Couldn't they come back into business just like MRC could?
You're correct, Your Honor, that case is factually the same as this. It is the only case that we were able to find where the board ever addressed it in a factually similar circumstance. However, no union asked for labor protective conditions in that case, and it's clear that the agency simply didn't focus on whether the policy should apply in those facts. But in this decision, the board said to the extent that that is a different outcome, we do not follow it. The board explained departing from a past precedent clearly enough to survive judicial review on that point. And
so the board has to, I mean, the union has to ask for it. It's not entitled to it.
No, Your Honor, that would be taking that my point a little further than I intended.
But in Greenville?
In Greenville, the issue simply wasn't raised. It wasn't something that the agency focused on because the unions did not raise it. And it seems that the agency just assumed that the policy applied there as well. But here, where the agency took a look at the facts and the union did raise the issue, so that the agency needed to look at the entire context. This in this decision, which was a case of first impression because we hadn't really addressed it before with any thought, this is how the agency ruled, and it seems reasonable to follow the dictates of Congress and to apply a policy narrowly. The policy was developed at a time back in 1942 when the agency had no requirement to impose labor protections in abandonments or discontinuances. In fact, the agency originally did not think it had that authority. And in the early Supreme Court decisions, the court said, yes, you have the discretion to decide whether or not to impose labor protection. So the agency developed this policy at a very early point in time. It has been grandfathered in, if you will, in our opinion, both by the courts and by Congress, but that does not mean it should be extended any more broadly than necessary.
All right, any more questions?
Okay, thank you very much, Your Honor.
Let's see, Mr. Cunningham, why don't you take 2 minutes, if you need them.
I won't have to write a letter. I entirely misunderstood your question. The unions, my point was that the unions did not raise the question of whether the entire system rule applies to discontinuances. Your point was that they were challenging the entire exception, and
yes.
Both are right from my perspective. I think the most important thing here for Judge Kavanaugh is to look at page 7 of our opening brief, which really is the key to the policies, and note that in the board and for all of the panel, if you be so kind, note that nowhere in the board's decision does it talk about the relocation or benefits. And I'm confident that our reading of what the purpose of the rule is and that the fact that the STB's logic does not address that purpose at any point or rationale is true, because none of the so-called benefits that the STB attributes to discontinuance produce any revenues to support labor protection. The line is laying fallow, and that has been the key rationale. There was something there to sustain it, and there is no need for a hearing to find that out. If you're going to terminate all your services, there is no
The line is
labor
lying
protection.
Fallow as a common carrier. Right.
It will lie fallow except for a very short piece over which someone else will operate.
Right.
And that's the without a common carrier.
I mean, there's still trains using that line, right?
But not in common carrier service. And again, the point is the common carrier system can be taxed to gain efficiencies on the entire system, but the individual railroad cannot be taxed merely to transfer that money, particularly when it's hemorrhaging cash as we are, to transfer that money to its employees.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.